So here we are, and glad you've made it your way. What's going on in Frenchtown? We've got Michelle Gomez talking with us today about Tallahassee's first food-based incubator, Danny Bedrosian. Oh, my goodness. Great songster, performer, has performed for years with the likes of George Clinton. I mean, come on. There's a lot going on, so stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
When you place a document in someone's hand, it should reach more than their head. It needs to reach their heart with compelling visuals and dramatic presentations, right down to the paper it's printed on. Rapid Press reaches the hearts of thousands of people every day with commercial printing and mailing services, for organizations that feed and house children, for businesses that bring vital products and services to our community, and for theaters, festivals, and orchestras reaching bigger audiences and bringing joy to life. Rapid Press, commercial printers since 1983.
For digital printing, offset printing, finishing, and mailing services, reach for Rapid Press. When you're ready to share your vision, excite your customers, and reach the hearts of your audience, reach for Rapid Press. You'll find them online at rapidpress.com or call 893-7346. 893-7346. Rapid Press, the power of print.
It is always our interest here to bring to you the very best in medical information and updates and education, direction, when we rely on those practitioners among us who are proficient in their provision of such things. And we have another marvelous contribution to our well-being here, Dr. Fang Sarah Ko. You've heard her before. This is her return visit, but we want to give her opportunity to bring us up to date on some things. Dr. Ko, good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
In regard to Dr. Ko's contribution here, she is a Tallahassee native, if you didn't know that. Grew up here in Tallahassee, graduated from Lincoln High School. Her parents, computer wizards that worked for the state of Florida for many years, now retired. Nonetheless, I would say this, in my humble opinion, you've done quite well for yourself in bringing to us all of your training, your devotion to this business of ocular health, ophthalmology, right? And practicing here with Eye Associates in Tallahassee. And it's clear to me that you care very deeply about your patients. I think that came clearly to me when we first met, that there is absolutely, and I hope we can say this about all of those in medical practice, but certainly there are those that I have met, and I think you're among them, who display a kind of personal commitment to an individual's health, and it translates into the kind of proficiency and the discipline that you apply to yourself. It's one thing to be a caring person. God help us, we should all be caring people. But when you bring to that individual that you're serving the kind of expertise, we'll say, and the kind of insight that is the result of years of discipline and study and continued study, that makes you a little bit special in my mind. We're going to talk a little bit today about dry eyes, which is a common affliction. Get us started. What's the business of dealing with dry eyes?
Right. Dry eyes is so common now. You know, we're all on our computers, we're on our cell phones, staring at screens all day. And the trouble is when we're focused and concentrating, we don't blink as much. You watch someone regularly, they blink 20 times a minute. On the computer, they might blink twice. And then after an hour or two, your eyes start burning, right? And it's just so common. It affects people of all ages, but it's worse as we get older because we don't produce as much of our natural tears.
Ah. And so if there is something that simple to observe, are you blinking enough, then, I mean, what do we do? If we're staring at a computer, do we, like, set a timer and remind ourselves? Or
you can, but it'd have to go off every couple seconds. It'd drive you crazy.
Okay. Or maybe just have people come in and say very sad things to me. So then I start tearing up now. So I'm being silly here. But so in terms of our daily practice, there is some, I guess, sort of common sense remedies there.
Yes.
In terms of our behavior. When you find it more so that there's an affliction here, there are some treatments available too, I suppose. Huh?
Yes, absolutely. I have a list about 20 things that people can do to help with their dry eyes.
Mm.
And 20 because it tells you how hard it is to treat it.
Wow.
That it's quite chronic. You can tell yourself to blink more, but it's hard to hard to train that in.
Yeah.
And the most simple thing is to go to Walgreens or CVS and get a bottle of artificial tears. And when your eyes feel tired, you put in a drop, close your eyes for a minute, let them rest, and then carry on with your day.
Yeah. And that revitalization is enough. And does that help stimulate more tears, or is that just merely a supplement?
That's an excellent question. It's a supplement, and it'll wear off in a matter of time. It doesn't last forever, so you can do it again, you know, a couple times a day. Or if you want to stimulate your eyes to produce their natural tears, what I tell my patients is to use heat.
Mm.
So like a washcloth soaked in hot water, or you can make your own homemade bean bag with a clean sock and some dry rice. You microwave that for 30 seconds. I'm giving you some good secrets here.
This is good stuff. Wow.
So the heat can stimulate your eyes to produce more natural tears.
Wonderful. Huh. And you said that it is a function of the aging process.
Yeah.
As we get older, we tend to not produce as much fluid.
Yeah.
And
the reason for that is because, well, one, we don't produce enough fluid, as you say, enough tears.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is we always think of tears as water. But it's more complicated than that.
Mm.
There's water, there's protein, there's oils. And I'm going to talk to you about the oils in our tears.
Okay.
Is if you imagine a bowl of soup that's very watery, it's going to evaporate right away.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas that oily bowl of soup will stick around a lot longer,
right,
and be higher quality.
Right.
And with time, our oil glands get clogged up from dust in the air, from our sweat. Women, when we wear makeup. A lot of us
not
don't
good.
Take it off every night.
Not good.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
And so as those oil glands get clogged up, the tears that we produce are lower quality.
Mm.
And that's why they don't last as long and our eyes feel more bothered.
Look at that. Oil glands as opposed to tear ducts, right? Not the
right.
same thing.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the oil glands are not even visible to us. They're not on the So the tear ducts we can notice, but they are reliant on what we're producing in general to create these natural tears,
right.
Huh?
Yeah. Right. Our oil glands are right at the base of our eyelashes.
Ah.
Right on the edge of our eyelids.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go, folks. We've learned a little bit more courtesy of the very lovely Dr. Koh.
And I will say,
yes,
there's actually something new, because you mentioned you wanted me to talk about any new developments.
Please.
There's something called a LipiFlow, and it's a machine that will actually clean out your oil glands if that's the problem.
Well, look at that.
Yeah. So,
well, maybe every 30,000 miles or something, I should come in for a cleaning.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, I don't wear eye makeup, but, I still
maybe
work
at,
in dusty
at night.
Conditions. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just
depending
kidding.
On where I might be hanging for the evening. Right, I get that. Well, thank you so much. We're going to have you come back and talk to us further about other developments in this fascinating area of medicine and your contributions here locally. Folks, this is another opportunity for us to learn, courtesy of the folks at iAssociates and our good friend, Dr. Ko, Dr. Fang Sarah Ko, who will return on another occasion if we can persuade her to come back and, who knows, maybe wear her red boots again. Because that's a very cool thing. Stay with me, folks. We've got more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
I love my Volvo. That's why I love Volcar. They take care of my Volvo the way I do. But my husband doesn't drive a Volvo. Good news, Volcar cares for all cars, and they give the same extra attention to detail and the same qualified precision every car requires. New or not so new, Carol and her team at Volcar are some of my most favorite people. She makes it a lot easier to understand what's going on with my car. And I trust her. And I think my husband does too, especially when he saw they charge less than his mechanic for the same service. So we're just one big happy family. Me, my Volvo, and my husband. With a little help from our friends at Volcar.
Volcar Sales and Service on Capital Circle Northeast, just north of Miccosukee in Tallahassee. Volcar for all cars on the web at volcartally.com or call 942-4980, 942-4980.
Changing the face of talk radio in Tallahassee, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time now for today's Business Spotlight with Miriam Dady.
Hello, it's Miriam Dady, and it's time for Tallahassee Business Spotlight once again. I have someone that everybody wants to meet. She's not on your radar yet. If she isn't, she will be soon. I have Alicia Cartwright of Ponderosa Junction with me. And what is Ponderosa Junction? It's furniture. Beautiful furniture. Alicia, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. We call it a comfortable place to furnish your space.
There you go. I like that. That's catchy. Tell me about Ponderosa Junction. How'd you get that?
Well, the name itself, I'm a Cartwright.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see pictures of Hoss and Little Joe. Exactly. My husband is Vince Cartwright, and he's sort of a legend in town. He's a middle school teacher at Deer Lake Middle School, and he teaches U.S. history. And everywhere we go, people go, Mr. Cartwright, oh, you're my favorite teacher, Mr. Cartwright. So he had an uncle that was named Uncle Hoss is what we called him. And so it's just kind of been a shtick in the family. And my creative, I have a media side to my business called Ponderosa Creative Group. Mm-hmm. And this is a DBA of that.
But it's not Western furniture.
No, it's not. Not at all. And junction is a key word in it because we're bringing a lot of things together.
Okay.
So there's a lot of different technologies and things that we're bringing together to create a whole experience so people can design their lifestyle more than just buy furniture.
So I walk into Ponderosa Junction. How is it different from every other furniture store I walk into?
Well, when you walk in, you'll notice that we have smalls on the floor. And when I say smalls, I mean we have the side chair to living room groups. It's very important to sit down, touch and feel, make sure it's comfortable. But the sofa love seat we'll have on our smart stations, and that keeps our overhead low so that we can pass those savings along. So people come in and it has this boutique feel. It's it feels very rich and luxurious, and it is, but the prices are very reasonable. So people are always surprised when they see our pricing.
What is a smart station?
Smart station is a tool. It's basically an iPad that has all these cool tools in it to help you with your shopping experience. So people generally they shop online first, and then they may come into a store, try some things out, but then they might go back online and purchase at the end of the day. So we're trying to marry those two things. We're trying to work with the online traffic so that people can go on our website, they can come into the store, touch and feel the fabric, sit down, they can get the customer service they can't get online. So we can do delivery, we can do a lot of things like that, but we have part of our merchandise online and we have part in the store. And that way, it keeps our overhead low, and we pass those savings along to customers.
So when I sit down at a smart station,
what am I seeing?
You're
what do
seeing,
I pick out? What do I do?
You know, beds and dining room. We're there to guide you through, so you're not alone in the process. When you come in, we kind of guide you through the whole process.
So
you
do I see a room?
No, you see individual pieces of furniture.
Oh, okay.
And then once we have a live feed of the manufacturer, so we can tell if it's in stock currently, and if it's not, when it will be shipping. So you'll know if you need it next week, then, and it's not, you know, it's back ordered until August 30th, then it's not going to be the right piece of furniture for you.
Gotcha.
But we have the full description of how it's made, all of that. We have the dimensions of the piece. You can send it to your email or to your phone directly from the app, the furniture application. But once we have those dimensions, then we can go into our 3D design tool. And I think that probably is the piece of technology that sets us apart from any other furniture store in town. We can go in, just like you see on HDTV, we call it the HDTV experience, that we can go in and all we need are the dimensions of your room, and we can quickly lay out your room for you, plug in the piece of furniture that you liked, and then upload the actual fabrics from the other app into the 3D design tool to see how you like it in your space.
Come on.
Yep. So the technology is there. You know, sometimes people say, you know, you're on the bleeding edge of technology right now. And I probably am.
You can put in the fabrics. You
That's
can
right.
put in the sofa, the lamp,
we can
the
put
side table.
Representative pieces of furniture. You know, it's too
So that
too
I get
hard
to look at the picture of it.
Absolutely. And we can lay out your room.
I don't like it there. I want to move it over on this wall. I just do it with my finger.
All right. Saves a lot of husbands their backs. You know what I mean? Because we can just do it with our finger on the iPad. And that they don't have to actually move it around the room 25 times for their wife.
Alicia, I think you are so on to something here. So. Do you sell rugs?
We do. We sell all sorts of accessories. We have rugs, wall art, lamps, tabletop, you know, trays, anything like that. So we have all
How
the accessories.
How would you describe your furniture? Is this like...
It's everything under the sun. You know, one of the things that... One of the things that we are focusing on, because there's a niche in Tallahassee we were finding, is modern furniture. Ooh. So we have very... And I would say that most of Tallahassee is somewhere in the transitional range when it comes to furniture styles.
Sure.
Because most people have some rustic pieces that are mixed with ultra-modern, and they have, you know, more antiques that are mixed with pieces that are a little more modern.
Yeah.
So we have some vendors that are very, very focused on the modern side. So if people are looking for modern furniture, there's really nowhere else to go in Tallahassee for really modern furniture. So we're bringing more of that in.
Okay.
But they have these rich leathers and wood tones. So if you come into my store, you'll see these very modern pieces sitting right with all of the other recliners. And that's right.
Okay. Now, I've heard of this. Mm-hmm. I didn't participate, but I've heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was having like a bridal party in your space.
Right.
And they're picking out furniture and drinking wine and having cheese. Is
we do all kinds of events.
That's kind of neat.
We do. We have girls' nights out is one of the one of the main ones that is most popular. So you can get yourself and several of your friends together and have a girls' night out, and everybody can shop. They get a 15% off during that event.
Mm-hmm.
So they can come in, shop, and the host actually of the party gets 5% back on everything. So it's a neat little kickback and store credit, you know what I mean? So they can shop later on. But we provide wine and hors d'oeuvres, light hors d'oeuvres during the party. But for bridal showers, they can fully cater it and bring it in. And we have a live feed on our smart station, so we can live feed to family from out of town. So if they bought them a gift, and we do have a gift registry online, so they can go online, do a gift registry, send it to friends and family, and then their family that bought a gift for them can watch them open the gift in our store.
Get out.
During the
This
yeah,
is
during
Buck
the
Rogers.
Right? Well, it's time for us to go there. You know what I mean? Furniture's really not progressed a lot with you know, the times, and so it's time for us to move up into that. There's no reason why furniture and home accessories shouldn't be on your bridal registry. I mean, that's to me is almost a no-brainer.
All right, and we've just about used all our time just talking about fun furniture. How are people going to find you? How do they reach out to you?
Well, PonderosaJunction.com is our website, first of all. We're in Bannerman Crossing. where you're going to see different things popping up around town. But Bannerman Crossings is our you know, main, that's our mothership. That's where we're going to be focused from mainly. So we're in Bannerman Crossing right by the wharf. We're right on the roundabout as you go in toward Blue Halo and all of those wonderful restaurants. So we're right there on the roundabout. But we also have a shop in Midtown that's actually undergoing a transformation right now.
Yeah.
Restoration Hardware does this concept in Atlanta and Chicago where they have whole cafes that are furnished with furniture that's for sale. So I have a chef that I'm working with right now, and we're working to open that location up as a breakfast. It's a soul food breakfast and lunch location, and all the furniture will be for sale at that location.
You find your bar stool, and then you leave with it.
That's right. You sit at the table, you know, decide if you like it, eat your lunch, and then you say, okay, I want to take the table too.
I want these salt and pepper shakers. Goodbye.
Right.
I love it. And Alicia, I'll have to have you back when that takes shape.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for
being
here.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard it, folks, PonderosaJunction.com. But just drive out there. Bannerman Crossing has so much fun stuff going on. You really need to put your eyes on it. That's all the time we have. I appreciate all of you. This is Miriam Dady and Tallahassee Business Spotlight.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The Frenchtown Farmers Market is a pleasant place to pick up unique and satisfying local food. The atmosphere is friendly. The location is visually appealing and safe for kids. One of the only markets in the area that requires products to be locally made or grown, the venue has attracted an eclectic variety of vendors. So says Michelle Gomez, I'm quoting from a recent article that was published in the Tallahassee Democrat, and she is our guest at this very moment. Michelle, how are you?
Well, thank you.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
For those who may not know you, this is your passion, community-based social impact programs, having been your focus for a number of years, going back to 2010. And I'm reading from some information that my rather proficient staff has put together. We have a dossier for you. First in California, then home in Tallahassee, she serves as the director of Frenchtown Heritage Hub, which is an economic development program of the Frenchtown Neighborhood Improvement Association, which began in 2011. Neighborhood leaders came together as the Frenchtown Heritage Marketplace, talking about that here just a moment ago. For the past 4 years, Michelle has led funding, partnership, and design efforts for the $1.3 million project.
It's wild to hear.
It is wild. Does it feel that magnanimous from your vantage point?
It is huge. It is absolutely huge and exciting, slightly frightening, very needed.
What's frightening about it?
It matters so much, and so there's a lot of pressure.
It matters because?
Because this will be a game changer for minority owners, minority proprietors specifically, but for food-based business generally.
Mm.
What we are building does not exist in the entire Big Bend region. You'd have to go to Panama City before you could rent a kitchen. And even there, it will not have the scaffolding, the wraparound business development support that Kitchen Share will.
Mm.
I get calls weekly. People show up at the door wanting to know if they can tour the kitchen and when they can start using it. That's the part that's painfully slow.
Mm.
It's not built yet. It will be this year. We expect it in the fall. The incubator program, which starts with a 12-week food-based entrepreneurship course. That's going to start in October, regardless of the kitchens being ready yet or not. Applications open in August. All of that feels very soon, since August is right around the corner. So
here we are. Yeah.
So that part is fast. And
and this is called Frenchtown Heritage Hub.
The hub is the location. The hub will house Kitchen Share.
Right.
Will house the business support center.
Right.
It currently houses the market. The market
French
sets Town up in
Farmers
the backyard.
Market. Yeah. Right. So we can go down there, and
absolutely.
That's what your article is all about. If you want to come check it out, right?
Yes, it's a great time. There's we're having a big event on the 29th, Summer Harvest Fest, cooking demonstrations all day, live music, barbecue contest, vegan contestants,
all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
This also notes that you are working on behalf of Sustainable Tallahassee, Leon County, and the City of Tallahassee to promote the production and consumption of locally sourced food. And that is your point about the whole food business, right? And how pivotal this is.
Yes. That blurb actually is old. However, the work is current. So I'm not working on behalf of Sustainable Tallahassee anymore, but I am working to connect and fill the gaps in the food system so that we can keep our food dollars circulating locally and reap the benefits of that.
You know Jesse and Tyler Rice?
No.
That have Backwoods Bistro and Backwoods Crossing,
yes.
Right? So they were on the show here a couple of weeks ago. We pointed to them as examples of Tallahassee's brand.
Okay.
So there's a lot of hubbub lately about what is our brand, who are we, you know.
And I think they're, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the pull, the excitement of Backwoods Crossing is that it is, they have, it's farm to table.
Yeah, indeed. And right. In that capacity, your point is you can apply that in a lot of different, that same rationale you can apply in your setting where you look at the growers in our region, and we'll talk about the Tallahassee region, right, 5-6 counties around us or beyond,
right.
And say, you know, we are an agrarian economy. This is an agricultural part of the world. Why are we not consuming more of our own locally grown food is kind of a puzzlement, isn't it?
And why are we not supporting that growth with for that type of industry through our policies. We are...
Policies that have to do with...
We promote development, which is often in direct opposition to rural but also urban farming. So when a plot of land becomes more attractive to have a 5-story building on it, it's no longer viable as as a place to grow food. And so there isn't a lot of regulatory support for keeping our food local.
Yeah.
However, there's a lot of consumer support for doing so. And if a brand is what is unique about you, then I believe that Kitchen Share will significantly contribute to that in terms of Tallahassee's brand.
And if I recall correctly in our first conversation now these few months ago, you were talking then about some of the pushback that you were having to contend with, and maybe it wasn't terribly dramatic, or maybe it was, people seemingly not as enthusiastic among locals.
I think that change is scary to some degree.
In any case, yeah.
Transitions are uncomfortable necessarily.
Yeah.
There is valid reasoning for being suspicious of quote unquote help.
Especially outsiders.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there is, at one point, this neighborhood was open. Arms open and welcoming and full of doctors and lawyers and statesmen and educators and community contributors. And then there was a period of time where people came home from work and had no home. So there's a lot of history that maybe is not acknowledged or that probably is not acknowledged.
Right.
And so it's easy to say, you know, why are you resisting help while you ignore the history that set that up. Now, do I think that attitude is conducive to the changes that residents have said they want? No. Does the pushback come from everywhere? No. Is it valid just because it's the way someone feels? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like that the more Heritage Hub demonstrates a service to the community, and it is a service of, by, and for the community. That sentiment subsides. You know, it lingers in sub areas, but it is replaced with evidence, with proof of value. And you just, to a large extent, in communities of color, they're across the nation, they're the same valid lingering suspicions that get replaced, I think, with goodwill the more that you show up and you follow through and you keep showing up and you bring things back rather than just taking from, because that is the history.
Folks, we're talking with Michelle Gomez, one of those contributors to our brand that we think we ought to pay attention to, very much involved in the Frenchtown area, particularly in regard to this Frenchtown hub that she has now taken under her wing and serves as the executive director there for the Frenchtown Heritage Hub, it's properly referred to. You stay with me. I've got more with Michelle right after this.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Talking with Michelle Gomez about the Frenchtown area and about Tallahassee and sustainable options and policies related to growing food locally and supporting local growers and such. I remember growing food of my own, having my own little vegetable garden there and realizing how much work that requires.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And to be really to be proficient at that, on the east side of town, which now is sporting several major housing developments, where I used to buy sweet corn, white corn, I guess, this young man at the time, he was young, was second or third generation, and his father was actually the guy that I bought the corn from. And he had, I don't know, 10 acres over there on Pedrick. Well, all those 10 acres now are
houses.
Houses, yeah. So we lost that opportunity. And your point is simply, yeah, you're going to find yourself in competition for land when it comes to agricultural use versus housing or commerce of some kind. Now we have a multiplex theater going in on the east side. Frenchtown has this additional layer, we'll call it, or at least one additional layer, and that is the heritage, right? And that's what you were referring to, I think, when you talk about the history of broken promises, of exploitation, or segregation and distancing from that which we would refer to, I guess, generally as Frenchtown culture or subculture. Has that same sort of resistance begun to erode, or is it stronger, or are we seeing ways in which the community can better support Frenchtown merchants with your efforts?
To that last question, yes. To the others, I think it's not a simple answer. In some ways, strides are being made. Cohesion is strengthening. There are reasons to be excited. I think the local food movement is one of them that has taken hold. There are organizers in the community who have won awards in the work that they're doing. And then on the other hand, you have painful reminders that there isn't the breadth of progress that you might think there is. When someone decides to do something with private property, as is their right, and it should be, without consultation of the community, in direct opposition to what it wants to do, as with the student housing development. Now the community is in conversation with the developers, and there's some communication there, but that didn't happen before. That happened after 300 people came to a city council meeting and said, "I don't think so."
Right.
That it didn't have to happen that way.
Right. Was that your approach when you first looked into the whole Frenchtown community? Did you come at it from that standpoint? Hey, I have some ideas here, and you had those kind of conversations before you even tried to launch?
I actually came in and said, "What do you want to do? I'm here to help." And so my role has
even
been
even more open than
absolutely
having a particular a game in mind, we'll say.
Right. So it was for a specific project. It was for the farmers market. And just coming to understand better what the community, and specifically FNIA, the organization, wanted for the community.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it evolved organically in coming up against boulders. You know, you can't do this. You have to do that. How will we do that? We want the farmers market to be accessible, both for food access and economic access. We could never charge as much as it would cost to run it. Of the people who would be renting booths. So then we have to devise another revenue stream, which is how Kitchen Share came about.
Gotcha.
There were early members of that group who had already tried, who had this culinary incubator idea in mind, and they've since gone on to. In fact, Chef Shaq is now a celebrity, right?
Right. Yeah.
Winner of Chopped. She had been involved in a program in Alabama, I believe, that was an attempt to start a culinary incubator. So the ideas were swirling. My role has been to really find the path of possibility and fund it.
Indeed.
And here we are.
And finding that supplemental funding, we'd say, underwriting or whatever, is always the challenge, no matter whether it's enterprise of this kind or arts and entertainment or science. I mean, people have all these great ideas, education. We talk to them all the time. And it always comes back to that same question. How are we going to make this work? But you've done so with this sort of entrepreneurial, if I can call it that, approach that says, you know, you've got skin in the game here. You can work this and help us better contribute to the welfare of the whole.
Absolutely. It's been really heartening. It's a validation of the path that we've found, in that the people that walk through the door and want to use the facility, every single entrepreneur has a social impact aspect to their business concept. Every one of them wants to reverse the school to prison pipeline or support single parents, or, you know, they want to use their culinary skills and their entrepreneurial bent to impact change in their community.
Yeah.
And which is what we're trying to do.
In
so those things
way.
Are yeah. are married without even trying to seek that
it's
out.
It's interesting. USA Today reported a couple of weeks ago, 87% of those surveyed nationally make a buying decision based upon the social contributions of the thing.
I do think that's shifting.
It's a big issue.
Absolutely. We have our largest group of age group is under 35.
Yeah.
Millennials, I think, do make buying decisions based on the global impact or the local impact, depending on what they're interested in, and we get that feedback all the time. And I think that is where the opportunity is to adjust our priorities in terms of regulation, because it has been toward development, and that's the old
model.
Right. Yeah. And I think that as we understand that food is important, it's lucrative. It is the only growing sector of the retail industry. Eight of the top 10 national restaurant trends are local food.
Makes 80 economic
cents.
Sense.
It yeah. really does. 80 yeah. cents of every food dollar we spend at a chain grocery store leaves the community. Imagine if that dollar was staying and circulating.
Right.
It does now make economic sense. It's good business sense to have a social intention.
You need to make it a part of your purpose in life. Go visit Frenchtown. See the new Frenchtown, which is really the old Frenchtown, but being presented in a new way. How about that? The old Frenchtown in a new way. Okay, that's that. You can quote me on that.
All right.
Because we really are wanting to celebrate who we really are, right? As a community, and Frenchtown is a big part of that whole identity. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We'll make sure we have this happen again more frequently. Folks, that's what I've got for you at the moment. I appreciate you being a part of today's broadcast. You stay with me. I've got more coming up. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for over 70 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best, like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
The most talked about topics in town. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We have the very capable Dr. Mignon with us this morning. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you.
The fact of the matter is, in our Health Watch segment, each time Dr. Mignon brings us... You bring such good info about so many different topics, wellness issues. And so today, our topic, some of the people who are dealing with particular health issues related to tiredness and maybe weariness and fatigue and despair and that kind of stuff. Now, for those of you who are new to this conversation, you need to know that Dr. Mignon, for the many years that she's been in practice as an internist, pediatrician, she creates things. She gets bored easily. So she founded Health and Wellness Centers of North Florida and the Wellness Center by Dr. Mignon. So in addition to everything else that she has going on in her life, she has to do more of this. But that's your problem. We don't know what's wrong with you on that stuff.
I'm driven.
You are.
To help.
But you're driven to help. And in helping us, you find your patients oftentimes saying, "Doc, I am just worn out. I don't know what else to do. Or I'm stressed out." What are we doing wrong there?
Well, I do see this problem quite a bit, and I counsel on it, I'm sure, every day that I'm working. Because it's a problem of our times and our lifestyle. So people are working very hard, working one job or two jobs, or not sleeping well. And really pushing hard. And so I have to bring people back down to reality and try to simplify life, or at least I encourage them to, and to help them to feel better.
Okay. So how do I do that? How do you get me to do that? Is it through activity? Because I know you've got Zumba going on.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's through a number of things. But first, you know, I help the people to know that, one, they're not alone, that it is a extremely common problem, and that there are things that they can do to make things better, you know. So it's nothing that I can, or many times, it's not something I need to fix with medications, but rather I need to encourage people to make themselves a priority in their life. So usually it's making space in their life, which means making time for things like sleep, which is very, very important.
And I understand, too, and I think I've heard you say this, it's an epidemic. People don't get enough sleep, or they don't get the right sleep.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, it's an epidemic. I mean, poor sleep in general, and the fact that we don't give ourselves the time to sleep. So the ultimate goal for sleep is 8 hours a night. That should be your goal. And I have to tell people how to sleep, which is go to bed. You know, I ask, what time do you need to get up in the morning to do whatever you're doing, getting up, going to work? And then you need to, you know, have a goal of going to bed at about 10 o'clock if you're having to wake up at 6 o'clock. And to turn off the lights. I mean, these are very simple things, but sometimes people need to hear it.
With the TV on.
Right. The TV's
on.
That's
not a good thing, is it?
It's not a good thing. Or the clock is shining right in their face, or they're on their phone, checking their iPhone before they go to bed to check their last message. But remember, every time the brain sees lights, our eyes see the light, it hits a gland between the eyes, it's called the pineal gland, that says, hello, wake up. It's like a rooster. It's time to wake up. Oh, so we need to be in darkness. We need to be in silence. And we need to rest and lay ourselves down and actually rest.
Wow.
Yeah. There are some supplements that can be helpful for that if people have a problem. But usually if people are just quiet long enough, they will drift off to sleep. And there are some behaviors like reading before bed.
Right.
And also just preparing. So if you know you need to go to bed at 10 o'clock, I'm going to start to wind down and do some of my activities at 9 o'clock. If that's put away the dishes or fold some clothes or watch television or read a book, even better.
Yeah,
that could be helpful.
And I often find with myself that, and this happens, not often, but it can happen where work schedules or whatever, I'm eating dinner and it's already 9:30, 10 o'clock.
That's right.
And that can't be good.
Nope, it's not good for you.
It's disruptive, I find.
It is. It is.
Because, you know, what do? You eat dinner, and within an hour or 2 hours, you're going to bed. And what happens to the body during that time when you're supposed to be sleeping?
Right. You're not comfortable, and your body's trying to metabolize what you just ate, and you're supposed to be resting, and your brain and your muscles and all of your cells are supposed to be rehabbing. So, yes, you know, eating earlier is very important.
Yeah.
Some of the other very simple things are, of course, exercising, you know, making time to do the things that you like to do makes a difference in the quality of your life and how you feel. So if that means gardening, if that means going to a music festival like I did this weekend because I love music, so I made time to do it and it made me so happy. If that means going to Zumba class or exercise class or out dancing or being with your friends, going to the beach or kayaking, it is okay to not be actively working on something.
Do you find that people, they hear you talking, right? And yet, we're not following the doctor's advice here. Do you have some sort of protocol for implementing, getting me... I mean, are you calling me? Brian, it's time to go to bed.
Right,
I'm not your mom.
That's
okay?
That's right. Well, I do give people these skills, but I tell them also, because they know it. You know, people know, and actually that's how I opened the Wellness Center by Dr. Mignon, which helps people focus on weight loss, because people need to be shown the way or guided times, right? We're smart, intelligent people, but it's hard for people to make things happen. So I use words like, these are the doctor's orders. Your prescription is not medicine, but to go to bed or to be happy.
Yep.
And I also let people know that you will not be perfect at this, but it does take practice. Like everything else in our lives, you have to practice going to bed earlier. You have to practice making yourself a priority in your life. And allowing that to happen, learning how to say no to some things, including ourselves. No, I should not go to work on a Saturday. Maybe I should spend the next 4 hours doing something that I love, or being with my friends, or being with my children.
Excellent.
And it is okay. And you'll be better for it this evening or the next day. You'll be a better, you'll be a happier person. You'll be a better partner. You'll be a better parent. You'll be a better worker, a better business owner. You'll be happier. And actually, you'll be more efficient in your work and those other goals that you need to accomplish, because it's like recharging your battery. So a balance, this is life balance, but again, it is easier said than done. And so I have to sometimes tell certain people very tangible things, very, you know, I need you to go to bed at 10 o'clock. You know, this weekend, you should not work. I give you permission. My order is go and do something fun with your kids. You know, go and have a good time. It is okay. The world will not blame you. You do not need to feel guilty. And these are the conversations that I have, and it relates to health.
We call it Health Watch with Dr. Mignon, a very contributive, a prominent physician here in Tallahassee, our guest, and a contributor to this radio show, Dr. Mignon. Thank you for being with us today, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
When you place a document in someone's hand, it should reach more than their head. It needs to reach their heart with compelling visuals and dramatic presentations right down to the paper it's printed on. Rapid Press reaches the hearts of thousands of people every day with commercial printing and mailing services for organizations that feed and house children, for businesses that bring vital products and services to our community, and for theaters, festivals, and orchestras reaching bigger audiences and bringing joy to life. Rapid Press commercial printers since 1983.
For digital printing, offset printing, finishing, and mailing services, reach for Rapid Press. When you're ready to share your vision, excite your customers, and reach the hearts of your audience, reach for Rapid Press. You'll find them online at rapidpress.com or call 893-7346. 893-7346. Rapid Press, the power of print.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Well, as promised, we have Danny Bedrosian in studio with us today. How are you, sir?
Great. Glad to be here.
First time on the air with the Moose.
Yes.
But I know you've been listening for, like, a long time, right?
I was just recently hipped to the Moose, but by a very highly respected...
Danny, you obviously didn't get this. You're supposed to say, yes, long-time listener.
Long-time listener, first-time interviewee.
Thank you. Yes, that's the way it goes for the Moose. You just got to roll with it, right?
Right.
What's the matter with you? Golly. Are we not paying him enough? I mean, I thought we had all this worked out. Anyway, Danny Bedrosian is an amazing artist, and I'm going to embarrass you now because I can say that. Without any qualification, great songster, performer, has performed for years with the likes of George Clinton. I mean, come on. And what a great story you have to tell us, even in terms of your early days as a kid. Both of your parents, classically trained, started a piano school, right?
Yeah.
Teaching other piano players to play the piano.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how that works.
Yep.
Right? I shouldn't be doing this conversation. I'm.
You're doing great.
I know. I'm not doing great, but it's because I'm in the presence of this greatness, and I get all of Twitter. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just yeah. So tell us about those early days. This is back Massachusetts way?
Yeah, Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Growing up, New England kid. Both of my parents, concert pianists, graduated magna cum laude from UMass back when UMass was Lowell State in the old days. Yeah. And just the two, to this day, the most genius piano players I've ever heard in my life. And also both amazing singers and... musicologists really all around, and getting to study under them was a blessing that I still don't fully appreciate probably. But that being said, grew up in the music school that was Bedrosian Piano Studio. My sister, my older two older sisters and myself all were enrolled from like age 3 or 4 fully classical training, you know, practice regiments every day, concert recitals, multiple ones a year, and competitions and things like that. And we were very, very much enrolled in the concert piano world. I was definitely, you know, reared to be a concert pianist, if you will.
I'm reading from some of the notes here that says you were competing and you won against some of the others, and you were all of what, 3 or 4 years old?
Right. A lot of times I would be younger than my peers, and sometimes more advanced than some of my older peers.
I mean, this is astounding. I'm reading through your biography here, basically, and so clearly the destiny that you are living was laid out there for you pretty early on.
Yeah.
But you didn't push back. A lot of kids get into that and they kind of get burned out.
Yeah.
Did you come through that at all? Or was there a point at which you said, you know what, I'm done with this. I'm going to go be like a lawyer or something.
I think that even though I always had lots of different interests, and my parents were always very good at allowing those things to flourish as well. The piano part, I'm sure when I was in like 4th or 5th grade, there was a part of me that was like, I just want to go out and go sledding with my friends. I want to do what the other little kids are doing that I don't feel like.
Well, you had your mom screaming at you from the kitchen.
Right.
You didn't play that right.
Exactly.
Like, thanks, Mom.
And I think that there was some pushback, but thankfully it wasn't obviously strong enough in terms of my own conviction for me to want to stop.
Were they tough with you that they say?
My father was. Yeah, my father was.
You have to do this.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it was never have to. I think that there was some kind of, like, I think they told me once, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. And I think that made me keep doing it more than anything else. I didn't. I would never want to disappoint or whatever, you know what I mean? Because they're just, I think that at the end of the day, I realized even then that it was more important to keep going. And the funny thing about it too is all through the studies, you would, because the piano school was in our house. Oh. So it was right below the floor where we ate breakfast and lunch and dinner. Oh. And so my sisters and myself, when we weren't practicing, and when my parents, who are tireless practicers, weren't practicing, we were listening to both of them teaching their lessons to the countless dozens of students that were coming in and out the doors. So we also were meeting all these different people from different walks of life. Yeah, totally. All these different people from different walks of life.
You were a religious cult.
And hearing, there was always two pianos playing in my house at all times. So you'd be hearing like multiple, which can kind of make one go crazy. But it definitely was probably the biggest influence on my, culturally, on my entire
career. You were telling me earlier about your child. You have a daughter who's 2 now?
Yep, almost 2, yeah.
What's her name?
Ani.
And you were aware of the fact that Ani was sensitive musically, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So she comes and sits with you when you're practicing?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I still keep up my regimen. In fact, the past few years, even since she was born, I've really upped my regimen so that I still practice anywhere between at the least 2 hours and at the most 6, 6.5 hours every day. And it's all, when I say practice, I mean my classical regimen, not even the stuff I do on the road, just strict classical sight reading, you know, all my Bach, Mozart, Grieg, and Handel, and
Cacciatore,
keeping my chops up, trying to get better and better, learning new pieces, toccatas and sonatas and things like
that.
And she has been just a loyal participant and just totally happy participant in the whole process, and sits during half of my regimen every day and when I'm home. And she just sits, she'll sit quietly through Bach for hours. But when I play Mozart, there's always the same measures that she'll laugh at every time. As soon as I get doom, doo, 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 every single time. So there's something about Mozart, and there's been all these studies on Mozart's ability to make a baby react in these different ways. But it's like clockwork. Every single time I notice these reactions from her, and they're exactly the same every time with
Remarkable.
Mozart, which is amazing. But she's, yeah, she loves it. She loves the piano music.
You know, in fact, when you think of your own beginnings, right, and your parents and their influence, I'm sure that that continues. When you think of your daughter and the things that she's being exposed to musically, Do you have the same sort of ambitions for her? I mean, is it that way for you? Are
yeah.
you saying, hey, you really should, you should do this kind
yeah.
of thing? Or is it just kind of there?
I think that she's going to be taking piano lessons either from me or from somebody else. Okay. I think that's going to happen no matter what.
So the legacy continues.
The legacy continues. There's a lot of piano players in my family.
My goodness. Well, we're going to continue with this charming man who has agreed to sit in with us on this occasion when we're kind of celebrating local musicians, songwriters, performers, all of that as part of our week to acknowledge and salute Mus Magnificat, our radio station. So you stay with me. Danny Bedrosian in studio. We'll be right back.
Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. That's the Merry Maid's way of keeping your home or office at its best. And it's what we have come to expect here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Our studios and offices always shine because Merry Maids makes the difference, like they do for hundreds of offices and homes in Tallahassee. They'll do just the same, just for you. And they're right here, giving back to our community and giving you extra benefits, like saving you up to $400 on your first cleaning by giving you extra service, and saving an extra 10% when you mention Tallahassee Talks. Their website makes it really easy for you, too. You can schedule a cleaning and make a payment with just a few clicks, any day, any time, day or night, when it's convenient for you. Call Merry Maids this week, 850-386-2205. That's 386-2205. Or find them online at merrymaids.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We've got Danny Bedrosian with us. You have released a disc recently, right?
Yes.
New album.
Yep.
Tell us about that album.
Sure. It's called My Oldest Friend, and it is my, I think, 14th solo album that I've put out, all of which that I've been putting out over the last, I'm going to say, almost 14 years.
Wow.
So I've put out almost an album every year. Something that I feel very, very strongly about my solo career, and something that's driven me throughout the years writing my own original music. And it's a continuation of that. But that being said, and it's not because it's the newest one, I think it's either my favorite or my second favorite of all the albums that I've made. And it's there's a couple of my bandmates from P-Funk are on it, but for the most part, all the instruments and vocals are me, for the most part. There's only one or two guests.
When you're doing that, do you come to a point in the creation of the album that you kind of just throw it out and start over, or is it kind of fixing as you go along, or what do you do?
It's a really good question. I think it's the for me, there's probably a series of formulas that I go between. And for instance, the one I'm working on right now, the album that I'm finishing up right now with my band, Secret Army, it's one that I probably was done with almost 2 or 3 years ago, and I scrapped practically the whole thing and started over with maybe like 10% of what it originally was, rebuilt it until I was happy with it, until I was ecstatic with it, and then went around, changed a few things, kind of, and then said, okay, to the mastering people, okay, now you can take it and see where it goes.
Is that a painful moment?
Sometimes, because almost every master I have to have them redo. But when you keep that in mind, it's okay. It's just part of the process, you know. But that's how it is with the one I'm working on right now. But with My Oldest Friend, with the album that just came out, it was an album I didn't have on the books, so to speak, with a lot of my stuff. With my publishing company, there are projects that are maybe financed outside of the company, or artists that come from outside to have me produce for them, or something that I have planned for myself.
Sure.
This newest album, the one that I just finished, it wasn't one that I had planned. It was something that came out of, I feel like, a certain period in my life that I was just happened to be going through the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And it kind of drew inspiration, and it kind of became this album, which is probably why I like it so much, because I think it's organic. I don't think I was trying to do anything specific.
That was part of my next question, was how much of that creative process is designed, is it intentional, or is it kind of happening to you?
Right.
You really have no option here. You have to do this?
I do think it is a lot of the latter. But that being said, some of my songs are very prepared, so to speak. Some stuff I write, I notate. Some stuff is improvised immediately the moment I hit record in the studio, and a lot of the vast majority of it doesn't really fit in either of those bags. It's a combination of something I've prepared or something that I've done and varied 100 times over the years, where the song itself is important, but the canon is more important. It's something I've talked about for a long time, like the canon of the song, the many ways it can be played and the variations within that song.
Owing to your Mozart experience.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
My Schumann and all of that. Exactly.
Right. You can't just leave it alone, can you, Danny?
That's right. And I think that that's probably more common with me, is that gray area in between.
That's right, yeah. Well, we're going to take a moment here and listen to this single from that new album, Miss Maybe, right?
Yes.
Tell us about Miss Maybe.
Miss Maybe is a song that I composed on the album that is definitely in the P-Funk-ish vein. The changes and the parts, it's really a parts-driven song, and it has to do with what ifs in life. If I had maybe done this, would it have done this? If this had happened, and a lot of times I make things transcendent. So in this story, I think it's a woman. She's thinking, if it was this, would it have been this? Or if it was this, would it have been this? So it's a lot of transcendence. And I like when people tell me, oh, I got this out of that song. I was like, oh, that's not even really what it was about. That's amazing. That's almost better than what I wrote about.
Yes. And so, there goes the whole business of how music for all of us, I think, is transcendent, right?
Yes.
So it moves us to a place that we hadn't even anticipated. And even as the creator, you hadn't anticipated.
Exactly.
But that's telling you something about the art itself, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. Very much so.
Well, let's take a moment here. This is Miss Maybe, and the title of the album again?
My Oldest Friend.
My Oldest Friend, Danny Bedrosian, our guest.
I need you everywhere.
When you place a document in someone's hand, it should reach more than their head. It needs to reach their heart with compelling visuals and dramatic presentations right down to the paper it's printed on. Rapid Press reaches the hearts of thousands of people every day with commercial printing and mailing services for organizations that feed and house children, for businesses that bring vital products and services to our community, and for theaters, festivals, and orchestras reaching bigger audiences and bringing joy to life. Rapid Press, commercial printers since 1983.
For digital printing, offset printing, finishing, and mailing services, reach for Rapid Press. When you're ready to share your vision, excite your customers, and reach the hearts of your audience, reach for Rapid Press. You'll find them online at rapidpress.com or call 893-7346. 893-7346. Rapid Press, the power of print.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back talking with Danny Bedrosian. You've already talked about the roots that you have. There's something there in this DNA that comes up out of your family, all the immersion in that musical world, this music school that your parents started. But at the same time, you had these sort of heroes of your own.
Mm.
George Clinton being one of them.
Yeah.
And you hope that maybe, I don't know, someday I might get to meet him. Maybe I could, I don't know, actually perform with him, for him somehow, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how did that come about?
So I guess to bring it back a little bit, I think my father took me to my first non-classical concert when I was 8, and it was a James Brown concert.
Mm.
And my father was really hip when it came to stuff like Ray Charles and Art Tatum and James Brown. He really hipped me to a lot of stuff that was very influential on my career, what
if
ended up becoming.
If you're going to get in it, man,
yeah,
get the best.
Get the best. So my first James Brown concert blew my mind, changed my life. And then as I was getting older, I was hearing things like hip-hop, and a lot of the local groups that were playing around where I lived, they would need someone like a keyboard player who could sing to write tracks or to sing hooks. And then, but most of my musical peers were playing metal. It was mostly metal around where I grew up.
Yeah. And in that era. Yeah.
And in that era, I liked.
And everybody was angry.
And everybody was angry. It was and I was, you know, I grew up on classical and jazz, and I loved R&B. And I was trying to figure out how this was all coming together. And once I discovered P-Funk, I was like, this is it. This is everything. Because in a lot of ways, it wasn't a, like, my first instinct was, oh, it's a combination of all these things I like. But more importantly than that, it was formative to what later became those things I liked. And it was, in a lot of ways, funk is older than blues. It comes from this very old, originally African-American experience in America, and how it like went down the generations and became this thing. It's had it's had its name in music.
Speaking of transcendence,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
It's
so
it's like a time machine that transports you.
Yep. And then P-Funk, the band, George Clinton's band, Parliament Funkadelic, in its own right, finding out as I started studying the music that it's the longest running popular music band in music history. It's the largest discography of any single musical conglomeration in music history. And the band's been around for, it'll be 62 or 63 years next year.
And
so
George is what now, 70?
70, just turned 76.
Yeah.
So it's the longest running band with the band director still alive.
Wow.
Too. So you have, with the band leader still with us.
Yeah.
So it's really just this institution. It's an American institution.
Indeed.
In a lot of ways.
Indeed.
And even as a young kid, as a 11, 12-year-old kid, I realized the importance, even then, on music at that time, because at that time, everybody was sampling P-Funk, and it was this huge influence on everybody who was coming out at that time. Mm. And had been prior and continued to be over the years, and so I was really very interested in that. And I used to say as a youngster, I was like, I'm going to be the keyboard player for P-Funk when I grow up. And people would be like, yeah, okay, whatever.
That's just Danny. We humor him.
We humor him, you know. Right. But the musicians in my family were probably the most supportive, of course, but I don't think even they probably imagined that would have happened. But through perseverance and writing letters and some of the first emails in the early email period, I got a chance to meet George by doing this art design project that was like a contest where you designed. Back in the 90s, George used to wear these bed sheets, the big, like king size bed sheet with designs all over them or whatever. Right, right. They'd be real psychedelic.
Right.
So you could design a bed sheet for George, and if it was good enough, you could win the chance to meet him or whatever, right? This is a really crazy story. So I was like 16 years old, and besides musicians, I also come from a long line of artists. There's a lot of artists in my family. In fact, my my eldest sister, Holly, is a world famous fine artist. And she,
really?
Yeah, she's one of the top realists in art today alive. And she's really this amazing, her stuff is all over the world, and she's really incredible. She gets it from my grandfather, who was also an artist. And so there's a lot of art in the family. So I designed this very ornate bed sheet with all these different lyrical things that George had, and different nods to different album covers and things like that, all mixed in together. And they were just like, this is incredible. This is ridiculous. Come meet the band. So I you know, took every chance. I dropped off demos. I showed everybody in the band. So I was singing songs to the guys, trying to show them what
mojo,
I could do.
Man.
Yeah, as much as I could. And, you know, 16. And George at the time was like 56. So, I mean, look at there's a huge, now I'm 36 and he's 76. So you look at that. But that was my first little in. And they liked the music that I was that I was doing. So over the years, they invited me down to Monticello, where at that time George had a studio.
Yeah.
And when I was 19, I was a sophomore in college.
Yeah.
And George's thing, I'd always ask him, but his thing was finish school, and there'll be something for you. It was never set in stone. It was just do what you're doing. Don't stop what you're doing.
Yeah.
Do that. So I completed university, and once I completed university at UNH, I went down to Tallahassee, where the studio had moved to from Monticello by then, and just got a job in the studio as a session musician. Just you wait around in the waiting room until something can be done, and then maybe you'll get paid, and maybe, you know, I mean, it was that kind of thing. And a job had opened up on the road for a keyboard technician to tech for Bernie Worrell, who was like really one of my biggest heroes, classically trained, original keyboard player for Parliament Funkadelic. And I was like, yes, of course, I'll take it. But even my first day, they made me play on the stage. So during the show, and they saw, oh, he knows these songs. I'd really been giving the music, the discography, the same kind of study that I would give my classical music. So I really wanted to, again, pay attention to canon. Yeah. How did every subsequent keyboard player in the band's history play these parts? And can you play the parts in every key? Because once I learned what it was like being a sideman for George Clinton, you learn that is, other than James Brown, who was not with us anymore, that's the toughest band director maybe in the history of band directors, because you not only have to watch him for all these, maybe not cues, but feels and things he's producing on stage, but he also, you might have to know every song in just about every key, because it might come in during a medley or another song. And then there's several different ways of playing these songs based on how the band played them in different eras. And so who is leading you on this particular song? So it's the canon. So I really gave it the classical treatment in terms of the respect, which a lot of classical musicians don't give other music. I feel that's a lot of times their problem. The respect and the understanding of, okay, this is vast. I need to really pay attention and not, even with that, I still learned the most I would have learned my first probably year.
Yeah.
Just huge amounts of stuff that I learned. And within just a couple months became the full-time keyboard player with the band, and I've been the keyboard player with the band for the past 15 years now.
Goodness sakes. And so you begin this tour. Yeah. Tell us about the tour that's coming up here.
This is the end of the summer part of our 2017 tour.
Yeah. Starts in Seattle.
We work our way through the West Coast, Portland, Petaluma, Laguna City, Laguna Beach, L.A., San Jose, Santa Ana, San Diego, Tempe, and I think Vegas, and all over the West Coast, and then we come back for a couple weeks, and then we go back out again. But that's the remarkable thing about George. Whether he has a single out or not, an album out or not, he still works more than most bands today. So you could be a band, like a brand new band of 20-something guys, and you could work 30 to 80 days a year.
Wow.
George is still working, in terms of days, anywhere between 240 and 320 days a year. So it's like... goodness. We're still.
Now, do you get to take your daughter with you? Is that how that works?
She stays stays home, but it depends. Like when she was born, I was given special privileges to obviously come home early. I think we were overseas and I came home early from Japan and spent the time obviously with my wife when she went through the labor, and I was there for all of that. Right. And I've said for years, this is the one of the ultimate places to come home to, come off the road to, because it's artistic, but it's beautiful and it's calming.
Thank you for not only being here today, but for all that you have brought to the world and continue to do so. Much success to you with this latest album. I know it's going to be fantastic.
Thank you
Everybody's going to be chomping at the bit to try to get as many of those out there as we can. And thanks for being a part of Moose Magnificat. We love playing your music on our station. Oh,
thank you so much. It's my absolute honor and pleasure to be here. Brother. I hope I can come back.
Oh, man. We'll do the tour, and then when you get ready to calm back down, we'll have you back in here.
Great.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Friends, that's what I got for you this week. Danny Bedrosian, our good guest. Our production here is coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat. We're the production of Alcom Media and Entertainment. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny, and I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.